C3 AI software enables organizations to use artificial intelligence at enterprise scale, solving previously unsolvable business problems. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
Here's your money briefing for Monday, March 7th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. 7.5% inflation is tearing through the money you've budgeted for things like groceries or gas or rent, but it's also putting the squeeze on funds you might have set aside for long-term savings in your IRA or 401k. But figuring out how to inflation-proof your portfolio is no easy task.
You have to make the decision looking forward, and what are the expectations going forward for inflation and commodities and stocks.
On today's show, we'll call on our retirement reporter, Ann Turgeson, to take us through some ways of protecting your nest egg against inflation. That's after the break.
C3 AI software enables organizations to use artificial intelligence at enterprise scale, solving previously unsolvable business problems. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
If you're like millions of Americans, you've been building up your IRA or 401k retirement account to be sure money is there when you need it down the line. But high inflation can take a bite out of those savings before you get a chance to use them. So how can you hedge against inflation by making adjustments to your retirement savings? WSJ reporter Ann Turgeson is here with some ideas. Hi, Ann. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks very much.
So, Ann, we see the effects of inflation pretty clearly when we go food shopping or we fill up at the gas tank, but how does it affect people's retirement nest egg?
So when it comes to money put away for retirement, it's you know, like other kinds of money where all of a sudden you see the purchasing power of what you've saved start to get eroded. So, you know, the question is, how do you keep up with inflation? How do you invest in things that are going to appreciate in a way that keeps up with inflation?
Yeah, so let's talk about some of those ways to offset the effects of inflation. You know, for a lot of people with a 401k or IRA, they probably have a portion of their retirement savings in stocks. So what adjustments should they consider there?
The good and bad news about stocks is that, you know, when inflation rises in a way that's unexpected, stocks often get hit and they go down. But over long periods of time, stocks have tended, since the period when we've had data, which is from 1926, stocks have, on average, have done better than inflation. So that's over long periods of time. So, you know, at least in theory, if you have a decent amount in stocks, you may see short-term problems due to unexpectedly high inflation. But over the long horizon, the good news is that stocks have tended to keep pace with inflation. So there's that. But for people who are inclined to want to make adjustments, a professor at Duke University who's done some research on this suggested shifting money away from some of the worst performing sectors during periods of rising inflation, which is consumer durable stocks were the single worst performing sector. Those are companies like automakers, and into the, some of the better performing sectors, which have included energy and natural resource stocks. The professor at Duke also said that his research suggests that real estate investment trusts, which are called REITs for short, may also do well during periods of rising inflation, since landlords in the past have often been able to raise their rents to keep up with the pace of inflation. Other people, though, caution that in this current environment, REITs may be riskier, in part because due to the pandemic and everybody working from home, some of the commercial real estate landlords for those types of properties may be in a weaker position to pass along price increases.
You know, it seems like every day we hear about the rising prices of commodities, things like oil or metals. How could they be used to protect retirement savings against inflation?
There are ways that investors can invest in commodities, which is usually through some type of fund, whether a mutual fund or an exchange-traded fund that invests in underlying commodities like metals, oil, agricultural products. They often invest in like futures contracts for those underlying commodities.
Right. But is there any downside to going down that road in this environment?
Yeah, I mean, commodities are very volatile. So we've seen you see very big price swings. So there's the risk that if you're going to buy in, especially at a time like now, after we've seen prices run up, the underlying commodities have run up. So these investments are more expensive. There's the risk of buying in at sort of a high point in the performance cycle. You know, in general, they're so volatile that when people want to add them to their portfolio, it's recommended that they do so in very small doses, like 3%, you know, maybe a 5% at most. And that people who want to add commodities to their portfolio should probably do so by taking money away from stocks and adding it to commodities. Because otherwise, if you add the commodities from like the bond part of your portfolio, you might really be raising the overall risk level of your portfolio without realizing it.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of pros and cons here. Maybe a financial planner would help some people sort out the details.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that there are those who believe in adding commodities and those who don't. But I think for individual investors, the important thing to keep in mind is that, you know, these really are subject to pretty significant price swings. And, you know, if you look back over the last, say, decade or so, we've had very low inflation and commodities tend to be highly correlated with inflation. So, you know, the commodities funds haven't done well over the past decade. So, you know, you have to think about, you know, whether it's worth substituting an asset like stocks for an asset class like commodities. And obviously, you have to make the decision looking forward. And what are the expectations going forward for inflation and commodities and stocks?
You know, Anne, bonds don't often get a lot of attention when we talk about retirement savings, but how can they play a role in being a cushion against inflation?
Right. So ordinary bonds, when we have periods of rising inflation, particularly when it's unexpectedly high, ordinary bonds are just going to get hit hard. So when we talk about bonds in the context of inflation protection, we're usually talking about what are called TIPS, which stands for Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. And when inflation is unexpectedly high, these tend to outperform.
Right. And as the name suggests, TIPS are bonds that are backed by the Treasury, and they're designed to keep pace with inflation. But experts say there could be added risk with TIPS if bond prices go lower. So how about another kind of bond we sometimes hear about, inflation-protected U.S. savings bonds or I-bonds? How could they be beneficial?
Yeah, I mean, I-bonds are similar to TIPS. They're designed to keep pace with inflation. They have an adjustment that happens every 6 months in which the return on the bond, the yield on the bond, is, and you know, I-bonds are savings bonds. So the yield is adjusted for inflation. So in that way, they're actually a very good inflation hedge. One downside is that right now, given the way that these things are structured, there's sort of two segments to the yield. One is a fixed yield, which is currently zero. The other portion of the yield is all the inflation adjustments. So basically, if you buy one, your yield is going to keep up with inflation, but it's not going to give you an added return on top of that. That said, you know, like these are very good inflation hedges. So they're well worth looking into. The problem here is that there's a cap on how much people can buy, which is that each year an investor can purchase up to $10,000 for themselves. Now you can buy $10,000 for yourself and you can buy $10,000 for, say, you know, your son or daughter, but each person can have only up to $10,000. There is an exception to that, which is that you can get up to an additional $5,000 if you receive some portion of your tax return in I-bonds. You can elect to do that on your return.
Okay, got it. So now let's talk specifically about people who are close to retirement age and have Social Security payments on the horizon. What moves could they make?
So Social Security is another way of getting some sort of inflation hedge on your retirement income. So Social Security has what's called a COLA, which is a cost of living adjustment. That is an income that you can get in retirement that will adjust for inflation, as opposed to with a lot of corporate pension funds, if you're lucky enough to have a pension income, generally those don't adjust for inflation. So it's just an unadjusted income that you get, you know, and with your investments, it depends on how well your investments do as to, you know, what kind of an income you're going to get. So that's why Social Security is sort of attractive. So there is a way that retirees can sort of increase their inflation adjusted Social Security income, which is you can delay claiming, and people are eligible starting at age 62, but if you delay claiming between 62 and 70, you see significant increases in the benefits that you can get for each year. And on top of that, you get this cost of living adjustment.
Okay, so people have options, but it sounds like there are a lot of variables.
Well, so yes. So obviously, you know, there's a couple different approaches. One is that, you know, people who know that they're going to be working until age 70 or thereabouts, even if only on a part-time basis, you know, it's an easier thing to do to delay your Social Security benefits. You have other income that you can live off of. For other people, the decision that they would have to make is to potentially live off their savings, like their 401k and other savings, while delaying Social Security. You know, arguably, we've seen stocks run up significantly over the past couple of years. So arguably, you know, it's not a bad time to take some profits and use that money to live off of in order to lock in a higher Social Security benefit, you know, when you claim in the future. I think people also need to consider that when you, in the decision about when to claim Social Security benefits, you need to also think about your health and longevity. If you have reason to believe that you're going to live a long time or your spouse is going to live a long time, the argument for delaying claiming Social Security benefits becomes, you know, very strong. And just to clarify, there is a spousal benefit. So for example, if a married couple both claim Social Security and the higher earner dies first, the spouse then can inherit that person's Social Security benefit. The spouse would give up his or her own benefit and inherit the higher earner's benefit. So there's a reason why, you know, for couples in particular, delaying can make a lot of sense if one or both expect to live, you know, to have significant longevity.
All right. That's Wall Street Journal reporter Ann Turgeson. Ann, thank you for being with us.
Thanks very much.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen for the Wall Street Journal.
Thank you for your interest in the WSJ podcasts from the Wall Street Journal. We're always looking to improve, and we're interested in hearing your opinions. Please go to wsj.com/survey and take a survey that will help us bring you more of the content you're looking for. Thank you for your time and support.